You know that sound. It's got to be Thursday. It's the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Welcome to Insights. How are you feeling today? You look damn good for Thursday, right? I love Thursdays. Everything's possible. Friday Eve, as I like to call it. We got a great show coming your way. Are you watching the Olympics? Love, love, love the Olympics. And you're going to love my first guest today. His name is Evan Mittman. He's an entrepreneur in the fashion industry, and he's also visually impaired. That has not stopped him in any way, shape, or form. And we're going to talk to Evan in just a few minutes once he gets settled in and drinks his iced coffee and kicks off his shoes. You know, it's hot out in the city today. You can't just come into a studio and start yapping like I do. So, are you a fan of Rue Reynolds' music? So maybe you don't know Rue Reynolds. He's a vocalist for Enter Shikaria. It's a band out of the UK. And we're going to talk about him in just a few minutes. Rue has suffered from a great deal of general anxiety. And I love the fact that he's come out with a lot of different musicians and spoken about the public crisis that are afflicting many, many, you know, millions of America with mental health challenges. Yours truly included. I've spoken about that many, many times here on the show. It's one more thing that makes Mark Farrell, Mark Farrell. So getting back to the Olympics. So the reality is, you know, it's summer games. And yeah, we're going to go look aside from the Zika virus and all the atrocities in terms of them being lack of prepared, et cetera, the worst prepared games in history and all that jazz. But the reality is, I've never realized how influential the Olympics are until watching it nowadays with my 7-year-old son. Because think about this. You know, we're adults for the most part listening to the Progressive Radio Network, and we got some younger listeners out there, usually in the teens, but mostly we skew demographically in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And it's great to see, obviously, someone so young embrace the Olympics, but I've never really understood the power of the games until watching it with my son, because not only do you get to explain the significance of all these different world countries coming together on one platform in Rio and exploring sport, the nature of competition. Now, competition, okay, you say competition, you're not into sports, but it's more than that. It's about discipline. It's about planning. It's about so many different characteristics that make up the content of a person. And that's so significant in life, whether you're into athletics or not, whether you've played them, whether you have an interest in them. But they're all the things that really kind of translate into life. Now, I don't want to get too deep out here and go out in a far left branch. But the reality is it's what defines us, right? I mean, you can't be a casual golfer and go to the Olympics or a swimmer. Michael Phelps, ask him how many millions of hours he's probably spent in a pool. You know, he couldn't tell you because his brain is completely waterlogged and pickled. Well, we won't go there because we know he's gotten a few DUIs, but he's passed all that. So anyway, in seriousness, I think it's just a reminder of how great the world of sport is because it gives us confidence. We all need confidence every now and then, a reminder. It's also a great way to keep in mind and focus on what's really important in life. I know sometimes, certainly I get off track, whether it's working too much or things happen in life, death of someone, but it's a great friend to have. I consider athletics and sports, even just going to the gym, like my best friend. I gotta go to the gym, babe. To my wife, I say, I gotta go to the gym, babe, and take care of the temple. If I don't take care of my temple, meaning my body, I start not acting like the nicest Mark Farrell because I turn into like this beast of a person. Like, I gotta remain active. My mother just recently had back surgery, and I keep telling her, hey, say, listen, you gotta listen to Isaac Newton. An object in motion tends to stay in motion. You gotta keep moving. So I am getting a little aside here from the point of the Olympics, but the reality is it's just a great world endeavor to participate in, because it reminds us, number one, that we're all human. We all have incredibly wonderful traits that we have and can display for the world. It's about competition. Yes, we speak differently, eat different foods, maybe pray to different gods. I don't pray to anybody, but it's important to realize that we're all the same. We're all vulnerable. We're all capable of wonderful, brilliant things. And it's a good reminder when you watch the Olympics. Of course, when I watch the beach volleyball, I'm not exactly thinking of all those things. I'm talking about the women's beach volleyball. I'm thinking about, wow, maybe I should talk to my next guest about going into the designing business of women's beach volleyball bathing suits. I think that's actually a good segue to introduce my next guest. And by the way, if you'd like to call in, we're always available at 800. Oh my God, I'm in a different studio and I don't have the number in front of me. Forget it. 888-something-something-something-something. You can email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. I tell you, all kinds of things are going down here. My timer is falling over. Anyway, I first was introduced to my guest, first guest, a couple years ago. I don't think he remembers, nor I do I remember, but I remember him speaking, and I was impressed by his experience, his life experience, his professionalism in terms of his chosen career in life, and his resiliency, and his willingness to, regardless of the hurdles in life, to overcome them. And not only has he overcome them, he has become a very, very successful business person. Evan Mittman has been in the fashion industry for over 40 years, even though he doesn't look a day over 28, 9-ish, especially with his hip-looking white pants, coming in from the city streets looking very suave, not even with a bead of sweat on his forehead. He's incredibly smart and well-gifted on many levels. Evan Mittman, welcome to Insight. How are you, my friend?
Thank you so much, Mark. A pleasure to be here.
Did you think that intro was about you or someone else?
I was thinking it was somebody else.
So take us back a few years. You know, here you are, good-looking, successful, well-built man who's done so much for the world of accessories, and we're going to find out what accessories define more of those in terms of how you got your start. But it was when you were in college in Florida a couple years ago when you realized something was going astray with your eyes.
Basically, what happened to me is after my freshman year in college, I was doing some type of work involving small print. I noticed that I needed some stronger glasses. Wound up going to the doctor. He looks through my eyes and he says to me, "Son, you have a very serious eye condition." I was 19 years old. I thought he was kidding. And basically, he went ahead and said to me that you need to go to the hospital right away. And I did. At the hospital, the doctor wound up saying to me, one of the foremost retina specialists in the world, wound up saying to me, "I'm sorry, son. You need to take up Braille, get a seeing eye dog. You're going to be blind within 1 year."
Now, we have to pause here for a second because the reality is you're in Miami, right?
Yes.
You're in college. The last thing in the world to enter your mind would be, number one, that you didn't even have to go to an eye doctor. Number two, that they would tell you that you're going to be losing your vision. And number three, that you're going to be having to learn Braille.
I was interested in girls and more girls.
And more girls.
Exactly.
On top of that.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, no car, no, incapable of reading, everything pretty much taken away from me in one fell swoop.
Life turned completely upside down.
Yes.
So have you had any experience with resiliency or any hardship in your life up to this point?
Not at all. An athlete, everything phenomenal. I was raised with two amazing parents, loving, and always very, very involved with a lot of friends. And, you know, obviously my whole life got turned upside down.
So mentally, I imagine you took a major blow. You're there down by yourself, I imagine, because you're from the New York City area. So
yes.
You didn't have any family. So was your immediate reaction to, okay, well, it's time to retreat up north because, you know what, that's what I know. And if I'm going to go blind, I need to be blind with a loving, supportive family unit.
Actually, you know, looking back, I never really thought about leaving Florida. I basically went to the local Walmart. I dropped out of school because I was incapable of reading the books. And I was a mess. And I started unloading trucks at Walmart. and thinking about what's going to happen with the rest of my life.
So that must have been sort of a brutal smack of reality. Here you are, you went down to Miami to make something for yourself, a name for yourself, get an education, pursue. Did you have a goal in mind in terms of back then what you wanted to do?
I was always very interested in fashion. I worked at a clothing store in Miami, and I thought maybe one day I could get involved with my dad's business, which fortunately or unfortunately did not happen with my dad. But I always thought that fashion could be my future. And so what wound up happening is that after crying day after day, going to sleep every night, basically looking for a miracle, one day I just decided, let me get up off my butt and let me live my life to the best of my ability with what sight I have left.
And an important factor in that statement was you wanted to be completely self-sufficient.
What I said to myself, and this had nothing to do with my loving parents, this was within myself. I wanted very much to be independent, not have to depend on my parents for anything, to be able to make my own living, make my own money, and that was a driving force. That's been a driving force in my business life.
Well, that says a lot about your character and integrity, Evan, because, I mean, no one would have thought any less of you for going back up north or wherever your home was to say, listen, I need some help, I need some support, and to kind of regroup and retool, and obviously to acclimate to your new self, your new normal.
I guess sometimes, you know, you look within yourself and something happens. This is what happened with me, and this is how I thought, and this has really been the driving force in my life and something that I pass on to my children as well.
Absolutely. All five of them.
All five of them.
So, that's amazing. As busy as you are, I guess you stayed still long enough to procreate five times.
Absolutely.
So an interesting way that you finish your college degree was getting your books on tape. And back then, it wasn't nearly like it's a digital format right now. They were actually on reel-to-reel tapes.
It was a big decision. I was in real depression at that time and really wondering what I was going to do with myself. And then one day I just decided, you know what? Let me go back to school and let me see if somehow, some way I can get my diploma. And I worked with the university, and they figured out how to get, you know, at that time it was 1972, so they really did not take care, especially.
Accommodations weren't really that were commonplace.
No. And so it was quite different for someone who really didn't look blind, but who was.
I've heard that before.
It was like a weird thing.
Exactly.
I'd look at the professors and they'd say to me, I don't really see anything wrong with you. I said, you may not see it, but I can't see you, really.
Trust me, my friend.
Yes. So, they hooked it up for me, and all the books were put on reel-to-reel tapes. And somehow, some way, I did get my diploma. And I'm pretty proud of that.
Good for you. I mean, there was a lot of hard work and a lot of mental hurdles, not even to mention the physical hurdles about navigating around campus. I mean, I speak to schools, colleges, even to disabled students alone about the Herculean effort and how you have the mindset of even going to a campus when you're a freshman, let alone without a disability. Now, incorporate the fact that you have a disability. It's a whole nother level and challenge itself. So,
you know,
well,
Mark,
done.
It's incredible. You mentioned that. I haven't thought about that for 40 years. And I could tell you that every day when I went to school, when I went into the college, and I felt different. I felt very, very different. There I was as a freshman superstar. And then all of a sudden, I was feeling my way around the college, and Oof, it was difficult.
How did your relationships change back then with your peers from freshman year?
Very much so. I was this very independent guy, and now all of a sudden I had to rely on other people for transportation, on other people to do this for me and that for me. You kind of find out who your friends are and who's with you and who's not with you, who wishes the best for you and who couldn't care less. But we did weed that out, and we came up with a very core group of friends and wound up picking up my social life again. Everything worked around fine. Didn't look any different, just couldn't see what was up, but I didn't look any different. And so the social life wound up good, and the rest is history as far as graduating. And, you know, like I said, I feel really proud about that.
So, Evan Mittman, paint me a picture of the day you graduated and when your family came down to Miami, you were encircled with everyone, and how phenomenally gratifying was that for you?
Actually, I didn't have a big graduation
ceremony.
Oh,
you just blew the whole picture.
Sorry. Let's refocus the picture. The picture is that because of my disability, my graduation was put off 6 months because I had to work harder to get that diploma. But I'll tell you, when I did receive that diploma in the mail, there was nothing better as far as a feeling goes. And obviously, my parents and my family were so very proud of me.
Jubilation.
Yep.
It took me 6 months to graduate later as well.
Yeah.
But it was all well worth it.
Yes.
Yeah. Because, you know, I had that much beer left over, so I didn't want to let it go to waste. I figured, let me just take another semester and finish it off the proper way. You know, really enjoy these hobs.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, what was told to me is that I had a year left to see. So I would wake up every day thinking it was going to end. And then when I realized that, you know what, I still have some eyesight, let me make the best of it and let me try and make the best of my life, period. And that's what I've done.
Now, back then, had you, after you were diagnosed with your condition of retinitis pigmentosa, had you met anyone with that condition?
No, never heard of it. Had no idea what they were talking about. I mean, from left field.
And now, nowadays, of course, unfortunately, it's all too commonplace. But when you got back home, you got a job out in Long Island City. And this was the road that paved the road to history, actually, as we can say.
Well, it's true. When I graduated, I did have the opportunity to get involved with a brand new company where we were partners in a very, very small company with 8 people in this tiny—
Is that including yourself?
Including myself. where we manufactured little boys' belts.
This is what you dreamed about, Evan, right?
Not exactly, but it was the start of something that became much, much more than I ever dreamt
that would open
in my
the
life.
Accessory floodgate.
Yes, it really did. We started off very small and just out of living and trying my best to do the best I could each day in building the business. I used to travel all across the country visiting customers, and slowly but surely we built the company from 8 people to 30 people to eventually over a few hundred.
Now, I imagine your liberal arts degree didn't give you the correct proper preparedness, I should say, to lead this company. So you must have a business acumen, innate business acumen, obviously, probably from your father as well as a businessman. What do you attribute the success, obviously, by being a very tenacious and savvy businessman? But are there any other characteristics that you attribute this to?
I really believe that a lot had to do with my parents, the way I was brought up. I watched my father, who is a very, very hard working man, who started from nothing and built his own company. And through that, I guess within me, I just had this incredible goal to build a company as big as I could and be as successful as I could. And I just feel very grateful the way things turned out.
Now, I imagine that, just like everybody else, we have good days and bad days when you have a visual impairment. And just to remind the Insight listeners, this is your host, Mark Farrow, with a visual impairment. Because sometimes, you know, this is radio, for all intents and purposes. You can't see me using my magnifier, et cetera. But I can relate to Evan Mittman, my guest here, as well on a lot of different levels. And certainly I can speak for both of us that we have, you know, a lot of great days. And some days we have, you know, not so many good days or good feeling, because, you know, being disabled or having a visual impairment is trying. It takes more work, but obviously the longer you live, the better you get at it, et cetera, the more resilient you become. But I imagine there's certainly sometimes in your business and in your line, which were difficult, but also at the same time, you are at the helm designing these accessories.
It's really funny. You know, when you think about it, I had licensing agreements with some of the biggest names in the entire industry: Calvin Klein, Michael Kors, John Varvatos, just the biggest brands. And all of them knew that I really couldn't see that well. And the funny part about it is that I had 25 designers who reported to me, and I had to approve every design.
I love it.
It was fabulous.
Did you have a special table, lighting, et cetera?
They had to blow up the spec sheets big so I could see mm-hmm. them. And then I said, yes, no, change this, change that. I even got into the colors. You know, the navy's not dark enough. Lord knows how I knew that. But yeah, it worked out well.
Isn't it amazing how you can be so perceptive on certain levels?
It's incredible. With Calvin Klein.
Yeah.
I used to go see Calvin. He used to say to me, Evan, let's go to the window so you can see what I'm talking about. It's like just unbelievable. I mean, just great experiences.
It's for myself when I'm working on landscaping, I can actually see when things are level. And people say to me, well, how can you see that? I'm like, I don't know how. I know I have very, very poor vision, but there's certain things that I don't know whether it's our conditions that allow us to do things, you know, easily or more normally.
I think somehow, some way, the longer I got involved with it, the more I learned. At the beginning, I was designing all the products. And then as we grew, we started hiring more and more designers. And you live and learn. And I never dreamt that the business would become as big as it became. We wound up being in business for 40 years, which is just unbelievable. Wound up selling the company to this $22 billion multinational company.
Let's clarify, that's not the sale price.
No. No.
They were valued at $22 billion. Now you're valued at more because they
had...
No,
that's who we sold to.
Exactly.
But, we wound up being able to build something that somebody else wanted, and they actually paid us money for it. And I wound up working there for a bunch of years, and it was a great experience. And now I'm very, very busy with my next chapter. I'm on the board of directors of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to start my new career as a professor at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Now, Professor Mittman, that has a very nice ring to it.
I love it.
Now, Professor, before we get there, I want to rewind a little bit because
you
share with me a great story with a top designer, Liz Claiborne, when you were kind of more than a blip on a screen, but certainly not a big game changer back then. When she was a heavy, heavy hitter back then, you got a call that kind of redirected the entire trajectory of your business.
Yes, this call changed my life. And what wound up happening is that they challenged me to redo the pricing on products that I had already gotten approval for, and the conversation did not go well. I hung up the phone asking if I could call them back after they told me that They would not accept my prices, even though I had all the merchandise in my factory ready to manufacture it for them. So, in other words, they were getting ready to just screw me, and I was not going to have that. So after I asked them if I could call them back. After thinking about it for a few minutes, I picked up the phone, and I said to the head of the accessory area at Liz Claiborne, what I would like to do is to discontinue doing business with you as of this moment, and just tell me where I could send all the leather back to you.
Essentially, you told him to stick it.
Yes, I did. And my partner looked at me, because he was in the same office. He looked at me and he's like, Evan, they're my biggest customer. What are you doing? So it was a big turning point, because what we wound up doing and what I decided that we should do is we should basically go right against them in the marketplace, which I did. And we opened up our brand new division called Cipriani.
Good for you. Now, Professor Mittman, what would you say to your students when you're in front of 300 or 400 students in your new position in a few weeks at Marist College? That what gave you the initiative, or what was the voice inside your head that made you decide this was the right thing to do at that point?
I think at the end of the day, everybody has decisions that they have to make in their lives of what they can and cannot accept. What was being given to me was unacceptable. So when I had the nerve to tell them that I am no longer doing business, the next level for me was really to go right up against them, and that's what I did.
And that's when you're designing purses, handbags, hats, and then more.
Yes, we started off with belts. We went from there to expand into small leather goods, handbags, hats, gloves, scarves. And, you know, during that time, which was the 70s, 80s, 90s, licensing was a very, very big deal. And signing Calvin Klein as a licensed partner was a huge, huge coup for a small company like me. And when the rest of the world realized if I was good enough for Calvin, I'd be good enough for them. And so we started signing multiple licenses, Donna Karan, Michael Kors, John Varvatos, Nine West, Guess.
Kate Spade,
brand after brand. And it was fantastic, very, very exciting. I loved it, and I think we did a great job.
You certainly did. I mean, look at your sale tag. I mean, I'm not going to get you to tell me now, but I mean, it did very well.
Yes.
So here we are, years later. Ironically, when you were diagnosed with this condition back in college, RP, retinitis pigmentosa, a foundation was born as well.
Yes,
rising in conjunction, in tandem with you, Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Yeah.
And then years later, you got involved with them. You've been on a board for years, and there's a lot of great initiatives for our listeners. Foundation Fighting Blindness is the leading organization, national organization, that provides doctors, scientists, and labs all over the world, correct?
Yes, it's the number one foundation in the world. We raise over $40 million a year. And most of that money goes right into the hands of the most brilliant people in the world. And the whole goal of the organization is really to cure blindness. And we are probably on the 5-yard line getting ready to score, because it is happening and it will be happening in our time. Very, very exciting time. When in 1972, when this thing happened to me, no one knew about anything having to do with retinal diseases or disorders. There are tens of millions of people that are going blind across America, and the foundation, through the work, we are going to help cure all these folks.
Yeah, special thanks to Gordon Gunn, the Steadfast founder. And there's a lot of great people out there. Ed Golub, friend of yours, who I actually had on my radio show, probably 8 or 10 years ago. son-in-law, Eddie Rusnow. Great yep. people.
These people are the foundation of the what I consider, I am honored to be on the board of directors of, and I would have to say that being part of this organization over the last 10 years or so has been one of the best things I've ever done in my life. To see the work that they're doing, I'd say that through all the hard work of the scientists across the world, we are probably one of the leaders in stem cells and in gene therapy in the world. So the reason is because the entry point of the eye is the easiest entry point of any part of the body, because there's no, where it doesn't get rejected. The body doesn't reject things that go through the eye. And that's why we've been able to do all this work. So when the breakthroughs happen, which they are happening right now, I'm talking about stem cells and gene therapy, these breakthroughs will also help in the finding of cures for many other diseases.
So somewhere, Evan, in this country, there are, say, maybe thousands, possibly, students who could be in the future, quickly diagnosed with RRP. But the fact is, with the FFB in existence, and then 5 years from now, gene therapy and all the other programs that you mentioned come into reality, that your work, FFB, and the path that you've taken, and all your work and dedication to the FFB could really change the trajectory of someone else's life. That must be very empowering.
Honestly, it could make me cry, because it's really making a difference in the lives of so many. And this is not just about America. This is about the world. We are going to make a difference, because we don't even know how. We know there are tens of millions of people in America that are going blind from these diseases. We don't even know what the number is throughout the world. But once the breakthroughs occur, it's going to obviously help all.
And the innovation continues with the Foundation Fighting Blindness. Starting on August 23rd, you are starting hashtag How I See It, which actually goes right through to October 13th, the World Sight Day, where everyone obviously in the world basically realizes and recognizes the importance of vision loss. But more importantly, this campaign is incredible because it's spreading awareness, and it's obviously a fundraising campaign as well, but you're doing it on a social media network platform, and you're getting a lot of influential people. As a matter of fact, influencers, we're talking about Serena Williams, we're talking about Dale Hart Jr., Earl Hart Jr., and one of the things that you've been asked, I'm sure, all your life, and I've been asked countless times, I can't tell you how many times I've been on a date, before I got married, that is, and a woman would say to me across the table, "So you don't know what I look like?" Well, now you have an opportunity with hashtag this is how I see it, to understand what people with decreased low vision can or cannot see. Explain, please, Evan.
It's something we've been working on for 2 years, and it's really, we're very, very excited to launch this campaign. It's going to go throughout all of social media, across every single platform, NBC, NBC Universal,
Facebook, Twitter,
just
you name it.
You name it. And we're going to have all these influencers that will be tweeting out the hashtag How I See It. People will be doing things where they are challenging themselves to do something with a small mask on. And basically, the easiest things that don't become that easy. Picture Martha Stewart trying to make a sandwich or something of that sort with the eye mask on, and Dale Earnhardt trying to drive a car. Not that he's going to drive the car, but with the eye mask on,
in a controlled environment. Not New York City, of course.
Yes, yes. But
so this is
it gets to the point of how important eyesight is to everyone in this world, and what a gift it would be if we could cure blindness in our time.
And this mask actually replicates, to a certain degree, what people with vision loss experience. So imagine right. Serena Williams on the court of the U.S. Open trying to do an ace serve wearing one of these masks. Well, she's going to do it, but not actually during a game. But it brings great attention to such a significant issue because obviously, especially with the boomers, macular degeneration, so many different degenerative retinal diseases that need attention and are getting attention. It's just a matter of time, as you mentioned. But campaigns like this, this is how I see it, hashtag this is how I see it, are, you know, very, very critical for especially the millennials and everyone else to understand, hey, this is not something that just affects older people.
Yes,
it affected you when you were 18.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, now to bring it to the world's attention that, you know, because many, many people just don't see that there are all these people that are going blind around them. And, you know, hopefully this campaign will be very, very successful. We'll raise a lot of money that we can put right back into the hands of the scientists and cure this thing.
Evan Mittman, if you didn't have that life-changing vision loss when you were in school in Miami, do you think you'd be where you are and the route that you took to get there? Do you think you'd be a different person?
I think I would. I think I would. Somehow, some way, you know, it's hard to envision because I used to think to myself, gee, did this person know me before my eyes went bad or after my eyes went bad?
Interesting.
Yeah, and then I kind of realized that, you know, this is who I am, and you know, this is the finished product.
I say to people that, I mean, no one chooses in life to have a disability, but it's made me much more empathetic, sensitive, caring, giving, and so many other positive aspects of
totally.
My character.
What I explain to my wife all the time is that what makes me happiest, honestly, is helping people, whether it's going to be students or whether there are other people within the foundation that are looking for advice or help. Nothing makes me happier than doing that.
Fantastic. Well, keep up the great work. And by the way, you have a bag of accessories for me today?
Oh, what's yeah, no problem.
Right? Okay, good. Evan Mittman, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me,
your commitment to low vision research with FFB and so much more. Remember, it's hashtag how I see it. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight. We'll be right back. The show's Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. That is the band Enter Shikari. That is lead singer Lou Reynolds, R-O-U Reynolds. He's the lead singer, and he came out last month in July, and he publicly shared that he has a great deal of general anxiety. So I think it's great, and I always like to bring this to the show. When you think of somebody who's in the limelight, he's a British rocker. Pretty much this is a little bit more of a Coldplay song. All their other music is kind of a little bit more headbangerish. But the point is that he has gone out on a world public stage, tweeted about a lot of different things. He even said, strange to think this time last year I'd only slept 6 hours this week. I was halfway through 12 weeks of insomnia and general anxiety disorder. He said, after suffering from exhaustion, I had to the nastiest panic attack of my life and was hospitalized, forcing us to cancel our download warm-up show. So it's great to see, not that somebody experiences this by all means, but the fact that they're brave enough to put their voice and face out there so other people can benefit. Number one, I wasn't actually familiar with this. Obviously, we have the National Institute of Health in our country, but in the UK, they have the NHS, which is, I guess, each of the four countries has the publicly funded healthcare system referred to as the National Health National Health Service, NHS. So he's basically doing this because he said that the NHS is terminally underfunded and the mental health sections often get certainly the worst brunt of cuts. So he's trying to bring certainly the utmost attention to this NHS issue and mental health issue that is prominent in the UK and certainly very prominent here in the United States. But Rue, R-U-A, R-U, R-O-U, it's time for lunch, man. Reynolds, lead singer of Enter Shikari. So it's great when I see this and read about this because, again, it brings more attention to this. Because when people think about, oh, people have general anxiety, you know, what's the deal? Maybe they're drinking too much coffee, too much caffeine. Maybe they're thinking too much. They're in their own heads. But that's not the reality. The reality is, look at this guy. You know, he's a very successful musician, and he can't help the way he feels. Same way years ago when I was having panic attacks and crazy anxiety, that it's not like a switch you can just flip off. If you have cancer, you can't just choose to flip off a switch and be like, hey, I'm cancer-free, because cancer would not exist, and anxiety wouldn't exist, and depression, etc. Certainly, there's ways we can control it, not cancer, that is, with medication, but anxiety and depression and any mental health orders with cognitive behavior techniques, etc. But overall, I mean, this is a real thing. So it's great when people in the spotlight reach out and say, listen, here's the deal. This is what I'm going through. I can survive. I can make it. And so can you. And on the same note, pretty cool. I don't say pretty cool too often when I talk about Chris Christie, governor of New Jersey. But he did pass a higher education law a couple weeks ago that mental health has to be available 24 hours a day for colleges. So again, for any institution, higher ed, they have to provide mental health after hours, 24 hours, I should say, available. So that's great. I mean, we've all read about and heard about this way, way too often for schools that have a lot of pressure. I mean, any college, two-year college, four-year college, I mean, there's pressure to perform. Grades, because if you're there on an academic scholarship, or you could possibly lose funding for whatever reason or however the ride is provided to you, the opportunity to receive a degree. You're working. A lot of students are working, you know, full-time jobs even sometimes to put themselves through school. So there's a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. So it's pivotal that a bill has been passed that will protect students and give them the access they need 24 hours a day for mental health, which is great. So hats off to Chris Christie. I mean, now if he can only, you know, pay the state back the over $1 million he owes for his Bridgegate scandal, his legal defense, that would be a great thing. Again, there's not many great things I got to say about Chris Christie, but that's a great bill he passed. And this is pretty cool. I'm going to read you something that I'm not a big Facebook person in terms of I don't post anything that really is personal on air. It's mostly work-related stuff I talk about here, the radio show, and my speaking business when I speak to schools and colleges and corporations. I post that because it's great stuff, and I like to share that stuff with people. So once in a while, I actually spend some time on Facebook, perusing, see what my friends are doing besides pictures of what they're eating for lunch or dinner or their vacation pictures. But there's something that kind of struck a chord with me the other day by a friend of mine named Andy Gladding. Great, great guy. And he wrote this, and it doesn't need any setup, and I just want to read this to you because I hope it rings a chord for you. On his Facebook page, he wrote, "One of the best things about being a New Yorker is that we don't ever have to hide or apologize for being who we are. What you see is what you get. If you love us and accept us, we love you right back. And even if you don't agree with us, we still love you anyway because that's who we have chosen to be. My deepest love to all of my friends and family, whether we agree or disagree. We're all in this together." End of quote. Isn't that great? So basically, in an era of like a world of fear, distrust, and I hate to say this, but hate. There's still a lot of hate out there and paranoia. I think it's great when we put feelings like that out there and perspectives, because you know, I'm an optimist. I'm certainly a glass is like really, really full, not even half full, really full kind of person. But I'm also a realist as well. So when I hear about all these different injustices happening across the country, it really is disheartening on many levels. But then I realize, you know, certainly how much good there is in this world, in this country, in your town where you're listening to this. show on the Progressive Radio Network. That there is. Certainly sometimes the bad outweighs the good, and we certainly know the media, unlike the Progressive Radio Network, certainly harps and puts the negative in the forefront because it's sort of the print or perish sort of mantra. But the reality is there's a lot of good stuff out there. And there's a lot of great people out there. So I wanted to just put that out there because I think it's just a great thing, especially being a New Yorker myself, certainly for all my professional career and just growing up across the river there. It's a pretty neat thing. Also like to share with you that a mentor of mine named Jack. Jack is a great man. And I want to share a story about Jack with you because he had a great deal of influence on me growing up. Jack bought a bicycle shop around the corner from me when I was in sophomore in high school. So back then, my parents were divorced, and I had a lot of free time on my hands because being visually impaired, I wasn't home studying like the way I should be, have been. I was always out on my motorcycle and my bicycle. That's all I did, and work. I always had part-time jobs after school, earning money to buy a better bicycle, different part, a new helmet for my motorcycle, you name it. I always had a motorcycle and at least two bicycles. So that was my world. Yes, even though I was visually impaired, that's what my world was, riding bicycles and motorcycles. Loved it. It gave me the freedom. It made me feel independent. It made me feel whole. It made me feel normal. All the other kids could compete in sports and do all these other things, but I couldn't. But I could get on my bicycle, ride like the wind, and also get on a motorcycle and be a little bit crazy. And maybe get some more respect that way. So that's what I was doing. So this local bicycle shop opened, Free Old Bicycles, and in walks this, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-eyed kid, Mark Farrell, age, let me see, sophomore in high school, what are you, 14, 15? And that became my new home. It literally was two blocks away from my house. But I realized instantly that Jack was a great guy for many, many reasons, because I don't think he meant to be a mentor. He just is that kind of a person where he speaks not down to people, speaks, you know, to the level of the person that he's talking to. He taught me a hell of a lot about bicycles, how to fix things, how to salvage things, what things I should purchase, what things made sense. And all that was, you know, fine and dandy. And I thought he was a good guy. I liked him a lot. And then after high school, I went to college and you know, when people turned 17, I kept riding a bike because I didn't get my driver's license due to my visual impairment because I didn't get it until I was 25 when these special glasses came out, like your surgeon wears or your dentist wears with telescopes on the end of them. So I did my first bike race in town in Freehold, New Jersey, called the Freehold Nestle Classic. And so here's the day. It was a June day. It was so incredibly hot. It was Africa hot. We're on the starting line. I mean, I was just, you know, sweating bullets. It was oppressively hot. So the start of the race was held up because yours truly did not have a helmet. Now, so you're saying, like, how could I be in a bike race without a helmet? Well, back in 1982, I'm sorry, this was 1980, probably 6, 87 right then. Helmets were not mandatory. Even in the Tour de France, they didn't start wearing or having mandatory helmet laws until about 12, 15 years ago. So anyway, so that was the deal. So finally, someone gave me a helmet so I can compete in a race. So BS, I win the race. Believe that, right? I'm still, to this day, in utter shock. I win the race. I did well. So after the race, guess who was there and waves me over? Jack, the owner of Jack's Bicycles, Free Old Bicycles. He says, Mark, hey, congratulations. Great job. Come on over to the bike shop. I got something for you. I said, great, great. So I went over there a couple days later. He handed me a brand new helmet. Said, hey, great job, Mark. How cool was that? So here is a guy, local bike shop owner, totally had his tentacles into the community and gives back in many, many different ways. And yes, this is an important story to me, but I think this is an important story to everybody because in every community, I'm sure there's at least one or half a dozen or more establishments, stores, you know, it doesn't have to be a bike shop. It could be a bakery. It could be a nail salon, whatever the case may be. It would be nice if it was a music shop. They're kind of, you know, fading away, certainly, as time goes by. As a matter of fact, I digress, but there's a great store in the village that has just either has closed or will be closing called Rebel Rebel. If you're in the vicinity in the downtown or coming to New York City, go into their site and see if they're still around. If they are, make it a point to go see them. Rebel. Anyway, so it's a great story because Jack just closed the other day. After 34 years, he said, this is enough. I mean, I've bought countless bikes off him, you know, spent a million hours in his bike shop just shooting a breeze. And as a matter of fact, when I was in college and I told him I had an internship at a radio station called CD 101.9, he's like, Mark, that's a jazz station. You know, I love jazz. I'm like, Jack, I know you love jazz. And so we would talk music all the time, you know, really just shoot the breeze. And he was a great guy. And I posted this on Facebook with a picture of his kind of closing party where everyone was hanging out in his bike shop. And the feedback was tremendous because people were sharing stories about how they bought bikes from him and how he's such a great local businessman and just a major contributor and vital part of the community, you know, the fabric of the community. And I think it's great when towns and states can call their own because of this, because I think it just says so much about the person and who they attract and what kind of influence they can have on a community. You know, they're major assets. So it continued. You know, I continued after college. Always bought bikes from him, bought my mother's bike, exercise bike, you know, et cetera. And so I always made time for Jack because I always loved stopping into Jack's store for real bicycles and hang out and shoot the breeze with Jack with a smile on his face, usually a sandwich in his other hand and a tool nearby. You know, Jack was always willing to please, and he's always done that. So it's an important story to me because certainly Jack is not going anywhere. I've ridden with Jack for many years around the Jersey Shore. Jack loves bicycles. It's an extension of his body. But I hope there's a story, you know, where you live and maybe in your life. And share it with me, please, because, you know, I'd like to share it with you guys here. You can email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. That's M-A-R-K at Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. Because I think it's great, you know, because we got to remember, you know, the important and the small little things, you know, in life. I mean, there's so many different big things in life that we get kind of wrapped up on. But, you know, it's the little things like that that really, I don't know, just make us feel good and really kind of build character. I mean, you know, I got a lot out of my relationship with Jack and his bike shop. You know, for me, biking is still an integral part of my life. I mean, I love it. It's a great outlet for me. It's freedom. It's independence. It's flying for me. Like, I can't fly a plane, but for me on a bicycle, when I'm going 20, 25, 30 miles an hour, or maybe 40 or 50 downhill because I'm kind of nuts like that, it is incredible the rush I get. So, and you don't have to be anything of that nature of a cyclist or whatever the case may be for that kind of shop that may be in your town, but to have a connection like that, and also for my son to see it. I brought my son there. We bought some bikes for him and my daughter. It's just a great example of certainly Jack's duty and not my duty. You know, my duty, I don't have a shop in town. But actually, it did cross my mind when Jack was closing to say, what do I want to buy a bike shop? And I thought about it. Well, I'll save that for another day. The suspense is building, right? But the reality is, you know, we all have responsibilities for, you know, the towns we live in, the communities we live in, to make them better, to show and to demonstrate and to impart knowledge on people we know. And that's why I love this show and being in radio for all these years I've been doing it. And more importantly, when I go out and do my talks to schools, K-12 and colleges and corporations about overcoming adversity, mental health, drugs and alcohol, resiliency, celebrating differences, because it's great to be able to share things in your life that can greatly and positively impact other people's lives. There's nothing like it. I mean, Evan Mittman just a few minutes ago was sharing how he started with nothing. Actually, no, he did start, you know, as a average kid, went to college, lost the majority of his vision, quit college, went back to college, learned and got his degree from books on tape. When I mean books on tape, I mean literally books on tape, reel to reel. Built a multi-million dollar business, made accessories for Calvin Klein, Kate Spade, Michael Kors, you name it. Phenomenal. And here he is, all these years later, still blazing trails as someone who is a major contributor, as a board member on the Foundation Fighting Blindness, giving back. And we said in the end of our interview how important it is, you know, if you have a disability, it's definitely made you a different person because you do things differently. You appreciate things in a different sense, in a different level, different manner. Now, would I or he or other people or possibly you listening who have a disability be the same person? Absolutely not. Hopefully, it made you a more resilient person, a more optimistic person, a person who handles adversity differently, maybe with, more courage. But whatever, hey, whatever doesn't make you stronger or, you know the expression. It's true. It's so true. And I appreciate Evan's time, and I appreciate your time, always listening to the show Insight here on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. If you missed this show or the early part of it, always feel free to log on to prn.fm, go on to show Insight and all the podcasts from all this great, unparalleled show are available for your review and listen 24/7. You can actually put this show on loop. You can loop every show, which I implore you to do. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or whatever, look me up at markfarrellmotivation.com. That's markfarrellmotivation.com. Special thanks to Jesse today, and welcome aboard to Zach to the Progressive Radio Network on the controls. And I could not do this show. This show would not be possible without the incredible assistance of Luke Farrell, the one and only mighty, mighty producer. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day.